Well, folks, yesterday I had the opportunity to see President Trump in New York. We went to the grave of the Lubavitcher Rebbe to pay tribute on the anniversary of October 7th, and I had the chance to introduce President Trump to the family of hostage who's currently being held in the Gaza Strip by Hamas. It was a really moving event, and now we have the opportunity to sit with President Trump. President Trump joins us on the line right now here on the Ben Shapiro Show. President Donald Trump, Mr. President, it's an honor to have you on the line. Thanks so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
Well, very good, Ben. How you doing?
Thank God, doing well. I want to start by asking, Mr. President, what you're hearing on the ground from North Carolina. You've really been criticizing the Biden-Harris administration for their response to the fallout from Hurricane Helene. You've obviously been on the ground in places like Georgia during this. What are you hearing on the ground in North Carolina?
Well, I was in North Carolina, and I got a pretty good dose because they asked me if I could help them with Elon Musk, who's a friend of mine and endorsed me. And I said, yeah, I think I can. What do you need? And they said, we need the Starlink, which is a big deal because they had no communication whatsoever. They said that there was just no FEMA. You virtually don't see anybody from FEMA. You're seeing a lot of private people going around and helping, but they can't help like FEMA could if they did it right. And they're very upset with what's happening with the federal government, as you probably have also heard. It's pretty sad, actually.
You know, Mr. President, Kamala Harris has been now putting pressure on Ron DeSantis for some reason. She seems to want to both suggest that she's in charge of hurricane response and also not in charge of hurricane response. So Hurricane Milton is obviously bearing down on Florida, your home state, and it's slated to be catastrophic. But Kamala has been busy ripping Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. She said yesterday that he was supposedly ignoring her phone calls. He's saying he didn't. She doesn't head up FEMA anyway. Why do you think she's playing politics with this hurricane?
No, I think Ron's doing a good job. I see him all over television. He's all over the place. I left Florida last night, and it was starting to get nasty already. This is going to be a big one. And, you know, they're in trouble with Helene in North Carolina, Georgia, a lot of other places. And now you look at this one coming in, and the woman doesn't know what she's doing. I watched her. I got to watch last night 60 Minutes, and she answers questions like a child. This is not a president. She's answering questions in the most basic way and getting killed over it. And every time she does an interview, she sounds like a child. She sounds like a person with a very low IQ.
You know, Mr. President, you were the person in charge. When you're the person in charge, you take the responsibility. She has been steadfastly avoiding all responsibility throughout all of this and basically throwing it off to President Biden, who is not there, right? He's been missing in action for months. It's the reason they pulled him out of the race, because you were destroying him in the race. They pulled him out because he wasn't mentally competent. He's still not mentally competent, but Kamala Harris has not invoked the 25th Amendment. Does she have a responsibility to invoke the 25th Amendment and oust him from office and actually take responsibility for the administration at this point?
Actually, now that you're mentioning it, I think they should do a double 25th Amendment. Just get them both out. Who's third online? Because it's just terrible.
This is the Speaker, Mike Johnson.
The worst administration, right? No, this has got to be the worst administration ever. They both don't know what the hell they're doing. And by the way, she is really blaming it on him. You know, I have some friends, obviously, over there. You're in the White House, and you have a lot of friends on both sides. But I have friends. He is so angry at her. And she's trying to distance herself. She doesn't want anything to do with him. And, you know, it was a coup to start off with, okay? So she's not exactly thrilled with that. But I actually think he'd be doing as well as her. Let's see what happens. We have to see how it rounds out. But she had her honeymoon period. Now she's supposed to be doing things that, you know, you're supposed to be doing. And she's just doing a terrible job. And she's doing a terrible job in the storms. He's hurricanes that are coming in, and they are big ones, and just totally missing in action and always doing the wrong interview at the wrong time. You got to speak like to people like Ben Shapiro. Ben, you have to speak to Ben Shapiro, not the people that she's speaking to. She's speaking to these people about teddy bears. It's just so bad. It's so sad for our country.
We'll get to more with President Trump in a moment. First, Kamala Harris's economic plan, if you can even call it a plan, is a disaster. Get ready for giant tax hikes, an almost 40% top income tax rate, 7% increase to the corporate tax, and she has even proposed a ridiculous capital gains tax on unrealized gains, which would just destroy the economy. All of that so she can add almost $2 trillion to the current $2 trillion deficit, you might be thinking it's time to make more of your savings tax sheltered and inflation sheltered. This is where I trust the good people at Birch Gold Group to help you the way they help me. Birch Gold will assist you in converting an existing IRA or 401k into an IRA in gold. The best news, you don't pay a penny out of pocket. Just text the word BEN to 989898. Get a free info kit on gold. There is no obligation, just information on fortifying your savings before the crazy really hits. As the exclusive gold partner of the Daily Wire for the past 8 years, they've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of happy customers. You can trust Birch Gold as well. Text BEN to the number 989898 for your free info kit today. That's BEN to the number 989898. Go check them out right now. Text BEN to 989898 to get started with my friends at Birch Gold. And Mr. President, this is slated to be the closest presidential race in modern American history. Every single swing state, about seven swing states right now, all polling within margin of error. Obviously, it's all going to come down to turnout at this point. You're a turnout machine. You get your base out. How confident are you in your campaign's get out the vote efforts? Because we've been hearing a lot of information on the ground, some sort of good, some not as good, about the ability to get votes out. Because Democrats are professionals at ballot harvesting and doing everything else that they can to get those ballots in, however they have to do it.
Well, they're the greatest cheaters, and they do cheat. And we got hit with now two hurricanes. And, we were leading Florida by a lot, and I suspect that'll stay that way. We have a big lead in Florida. And in North Carolina, we were leading solidly. I've won it twice, and, it looked like we were going to win it reasonably easily today. It's a little bit of a, purplish state, I think, because you have a, you have a governor, you have a senator, you have different things that are make it purple. But I had no problem with it. I've always done well. Nobody can really predict what these storms are having. I'd like to say to you, this is, something that, and I hate to say help because people are dying and they're dying. And that's more important than anything we're talking about, actually. But representation is very important, and representation for the country is so important. We're going so wrong. And people are dying on a national level at all different things, including the border, et cetera, et cetera. But the storms, I can say we have a great team. We have great people. They don't cheat. And the other side does. When they get ready, I was mentioning to a group yesterday, when they're getting ready for a campaign, they start working on cheating. Remember, they spied on my campaign long before I was even assured to be in. I mean, and it's all documented and perfectly documented, but they spied on my campaign. It was one of the first things. It's the first time I heard about, their ways. So we should we should win. And the other thing is, for whatever reason, I don't know, good, bad, or indifferent, poll numbers haven't been very accurate in me, and they tend to be low, like with Hillary. I was given a 3% chance and then won quite easily. When you look at other poll numbers, I've tended to poll very low, and I'm leading in every poll. I'm leading in every poll, and I'm leading all of the swing states. There are those that say, how can anybody take this? The incompetence of what they're doing with the hurricanes, and we have another one coming. And I think Ron's going to do a very good job and maybe save them, but they're not going to do anything. They're just incompetent. She is grossly incompetent. Biden was incompetent. She is equally incompetent, and in a certain way, she's more incompetent. But so I think that when you see the numbers, you may very well, Ben, see much higher numbers. With a lot of people say it could be because they go out and they see signs. They see Trump signs, but every single house, all over the place. And they're saying, it just doesn't feel like it's that close an election. Now, I don't know, and you always have to assume, assume you're losing by 1 point, because that's probably the best way to run. Just run right till the end. I've worked about 28 days in a row. I have about 29 days left, whatever it may be, 29, and I'm not taking any days off. I just feel I would feel guilty if I took a day off. Okay, I would feel very. You would also. I know you. Your work habits are right up there, and you would too. But I do tend to poll much differently than the end result. If you remember the first one, where I was actually polled 17 points down in Wisconsin, and I won it. You remember that? That was ABC Washington.
I do remember that.
Two real sleazebag organizations. And they had me down 2 days before the election, 17 points. And I had just left. I had 35,000 people at a rally going crazy in Wisconsin. And then I won. And I said to a pollster, how come John, I said to John McLaughlin, actually, Ben, how come they could do that? Why can they do, why don't they make it 3 or 4 points? At least they save credibility. And they say, he said, no, 3 or 4 points, people vote. When you're 17 points down, people say, you know what? I like Trump a lot, but we're not going to vote. I said, it's that way. And I never forgot it. I was 17 points down and I ended up winning Wisconsin 2 days later. And a lot of what you see is false. It's really terrible. The whole system is just a terrible system, actually.
So, Mr. President, yesterday I had the chance, it was really an honor to introduce you to the family of an American citizen currently being held hostage by Hamas in the Gaza Strip. That citizen's name is Idan Alexander. I wanted to thank you for that. The family was very grateful to you, obviously, for taking the time to meet with them. And, you know, it was really a meaningful experience. Wonder if you wanted to say something about the situation for that family and the other families like them.
I thought from a religious standpoint, it was so beautiful. I had not been that aware. As you know, I'm not Jewish, but I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, to put it mildly. With my father being a Brooklyn builder, I knew lots of Jewish people, almost exclusively, if you want to know the truth. But I thought it was a beautiful, it was explained the whole thing and how it worked. And it was very beautiful, ceremonial. And I got to meet the family and they were great. The young brother is very close to his brother, who's hopefully somewhere right now. I mean, they really don't know. The sad, it must be almost harder when they just don't know. They're not sure whether or not he's alive or not alive. They think he is. But, you know, being alive over there now is rough stuff. And before it was rough, but now it's probably even rougher. And whatever I can do, and you know this, whatever I can do, I'll do for them. And let's see what happens. And maybe I'll be able to help them. And hopefully it's resolved long before that. But I can see the families just going through hell. It is very, very sad to see. But they were getting great backup from some very good people over there that you and I got to meet.
More with President Trump in a moment. First, October 7th, yesterday, marked the one-year anniversary of the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust. 1,200 Israelis were murdered. Over 250 were taken hostage. The war in Israel continues to rage on today. Earlier this month, of course, Iran launched a massive barrage of nearly 200 ballistic missiles at the Holy Land. This isn't just another conflict in the Middle East. Israel and its people are facing attacks from enemies on all sides who want to wipe it out. But there is hope. The International Fellowship of Christians and Jews is on the ground providing food, shelter, and safety to those in need during this crisis. Since the war started, thousands of reservists, everyday Israeli citizens, have left their families to serve their country. Soldiers have been injured. Their families need our support. Your gift of $45 today helps the fellowship provide food and other necessities to these families to help them survive. Here's what I need you to do right now. Go to benforthefellowship.org. That's benforthefellowship.org to make a gift today. In the face of these many threats, the fellowship's ongoing work providing security to Israelis has never been more important. Remember, that's benforthefellowship.org. God bless and thank you, benforthefellowship.org. Yeah, Mr. President, I wanted to ask you about your foreign policy. So obviously, you're the first president in my lifetime, didn't launch any major wars, weren't engaged in any major wars around the world but during your entire term. But legacy media have, of course, suggested that you're a tool of the Russians. Kamala said yesterday that Vladimir Putin would have taken Kyiv if you were president. And then some people, even on our side, seem to suggest that you're some sort of total isolationist, want to slash the military. You and Senator Vance have said that your foreign policy is peace through strength. Can you describe what your second term foreign policy will look like?
Yeah, number one, he wouldn't have taken Kyiv because you wouldn't have had a war and you would have had the country just the way it is. I watched her interview and it was a terrible interview and just a terrible, terrible interview that this person can be leading. She's a very low intelligence person and that she could be leading this country. It's just ridiculous. She's never going to lead the country. Now, other people around her, and they're very bad people and they're not of our persuasion. They're fascists and Marxists and lots of other things. I can say communists because a lot of people don't understand a Marxist. You know, her father's a Marxist, and this is what it is. And our policy is very simple: peace through strength. We had no wars, and I'm not an isolationist. I helped a lot of countries. I kept countries out of war. We had two countries, smaller countries. I can explain it later, and I can explain who they are when we're together. But they were fighting, and they've been fighting for 1,000 years, and they go back and forth, and they were going to fight again. And kill tens of thousands of people. And I said, look, you do that, there's going to be no trade. There's going to be tariffs put on your head. There'll be no trade, and that's for both of them, et cetera, et cetera. And 2 days later, they call me up that they've made peace. I do these things. Nobody ever even heard of it. But I had no wars. Think of it. And I'm talking about in the world. The world was at peace. I did the Abraham Accords, which should have been filled in. I would have had every one of the slots filled in. Biden got none. We had the four countries and four very good ones and four tough ones. And the rest was just a fill-in job. It would have taken place. We would have total peace. And I made the statement because, as you know, Iran was broke. We had no terrorism. We had no attacks. We had no Hamas problems, no Hezbollah problems. We had nothing because Iran didn't have the money to give to them because I put sanctions on and I dealt directly. China, I said, if you want to buy oil from Iran, that's fine. You can go do it. But if you do that, you're not doing any business with the U.S. You can take your stuff out of here, and we're going to put sanctions on anything that gets through. We're going to put tariffs and everything else, every form of tax. And there are other taxes on anything you do. They took a total pass. They were by far the biggest customer, plus other countries. Iran had no money. Iran was ready to make a deal. When that horrible, disgusting election took place, Biden should have made a deal. They could have made a deal. Iran was in a position. Instead, he gave them billions and billions of dollars. He took off the sanctions that I had. He took off everything. China started buying more oil than they ever bought before. And today, Iran has $300 billion. They had a number of kidnappings, because that's what they were. He paid $6 billion. $6 billion to him. He paid $11 billion for electricity for Iraq that went to Iran. They have so much money now. The man is a fool. He's a stupid fool. We were in a position we could have had. And you know what I was asking for, Ben? One very simple thing. I don't want them to have a nuclear weapon. Very simple. Everything else, you know, I want them to have a great life. I want them to be rich. But I just didn't want them to have a nuclear weapon. I would have been able to do that very easily. But when the Kamala and these people say about Kiev, and people call it Kiev and they call it Kiev. I've always called it Kiev. And it depends on what part of the world you come from is what I finally figured out. But when she mentions that, she's wrong for a different reason. Russia and Putin never would have attacked Ukraine ever when I was there. And I talked about it, and it was the apple of his eye. I got along with him very well, which is a good thing, not a bad thing. And a lot of people think that's a bad thing. No, that's a great thing. But he never would have attacked under any circumstances. Number one, the oil prices were much lower when I was president, so he didn't have the money to attack. At $40 a barrel, he couldn't attack. At $80, $90, and $100 a barrel, he made a lot of money. So, you know, that. But it's not even that reason. That was a real reason, but it's not that reason. The reason he wouldn't have attacked was because of me. There is zero chance that he would have attacked. Ukraine today had the right thing happened in the election, and it did not. If the right thing happened, Ukraine today would be fully intact, the cities wouldn't be bombed, and you would have had 2 million or 3 million more people living right now a very nice life. It is so sad to see. And then I have to listen to these people say that, oh, Trump, like they say, Trump's soft on Russia. I'm the one that exposed the Russian pipeline, Nord Stream 2, and I terminated it. It was dead. The biggest deal they've ever done, I terminated it. Europe to Germany and all over Europe, the biggest deal they've ever done, I terminated it. And by that, I was rough with the nations. I said, anybody buys oil, you're not going to have U.S. protection. Anybody buys oil, you get no U.S. They terminated the deal. It was dead. It was done. And then this very dumb person gets into office, extraordinarily dumb person, with her. And what's the first thing he did? Kills the Keystone pipeline and approves the Russian pipeline.
You know, Mr. President, it's no secret the legacy media hides stories that hurt Kamala Harris in 2020. Obviously, the end of the election, they hid the Hunter Biden laptop story. In the past week alone, we learned from multiple witness accounts that Doug Emhoff, Kamala Harris's husband, allegedly assaulted his ex-girlfriend. If that story had been about anyone even tangentially connected to your campaign, it would have been front news, front page news every single day. Instead, it's been buried. How do you fight a legacy media that is once again rigging the informational environment of the election?
Well, for some reason, I got to watch MSDNC, which I never watched because I don't know what happened. He was being interviewed on MSDNC, which is one of the worst, you know, really a terrible, terrible group of people. And it was like a love fest. Never asked him about that. Never asked him about the other one. You know, he had numerous problems. Never asked him about anything. And was saying he's like a symbol for all men all over the world. It's the craziest interview I've ever seen. If that were me, it would be the greatest story in the last 5 years, you know, which they make up stories about me.
More with President Trump in a moment. First, folks, let's talk about the future. I'm talking here about AI, artificial intelligence. Recently, I've been using AI and use things like Grok or ChatGPT to make images, to search for things you wouldn't be able to search for normally. Take a picture of a household object and you ask how the instructions work. It's really, really cool. AI is only going to get more sophisticated from here. It might be the most important new computer technology literally ever. It's going to affect every industry. Literally billions of dollars are being invested right now. So buckle up. Now, the problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how can your business compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you're not using AI for your business, you are seriously missing out. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/Shapiro. That's oracle.com/Shapiro. Oracle.com/Shapiro. Don't let the left outpace you in the AI race. Get on OCI today.
The New York Times is one of the most dishonest of all. I watch this New York Times and it's a classic. Wait, you see what I'm going to do with them. You're going to have so much fun in 3, 4, 5 days. This is the most dishonest newspaper. They are disgusting. But the radical left, I mean, the radical left, the way they protect. Now, you could say, wow, that's pretty good the way they do it. But it's so dishonest. It's, you know, we don't have a free press. We have a very, very corrupt, and, you know, hence the name fake news. The problem with fake news is it's not strong enough. I get great credit for a wonderful name at the time, but it's worse than fake. It's corrupt. The press is corrupt. It's really bad in this country. It's really bad. And, you know, the hard thing to understand, if you're driving a taxi or you're a lawyer or accountant or anything, you don't know. You know, they write a story, you would assume it's true. You don't realize. When you're a newsmaker like I am, and you give them the story exactly as it is, and they write the story, and they make it exactly the opposite of what you've made it, you say you're fake news. But it is worse. It really is. The name fake news, I was very proud of it, but now it just isn't strong enough. It is just so corrupt. And I call it corrupt news. We're at a level now where it's absolutely corrupt. It's wrong. It's just so bad. And you don't understand why. You know, why wouldn't they want to have a strong border? Why wouldn't they want to have good elections? Why wouldn't they want to have good schooling, good, you know, so many different things. The military is bad. We have generals that do such a bad job, they never get fired. I mean, they should have been fired for what they did in Afghanistan. That should have been, everybody should have been fired. That was the most embarrassing day in the history of our country or period of time. And outside of the little moment, they don't even talk about it. It was one of the worst moments. And by the way, had it not been for that, you may not have seen Putin go in. The reason that was the final blow, when he saw how incompetent we were with Milley and these guys, when he saw how, because he's grossly incompetent. I mean, 13 people died, many people injured, American hostages over there. And we gave them billions and billions of dollars worth of military equipment. Unthinkable. I rebuilt the military. I had no wars. I defeated ISIS. Remember, I started no wars. I stopped wars. Iraq, Syria. I got out of stuff. We would have been embroiled in that place forever. I got out and no casualty. It was an amazing period of time. We had no wars, Ben. We had nothing except I inherited ISIS and I knocked them out quickly. Within approximately 4 weeks, they said it was going to take 4 to 5 years. I knocked them out in 4 weeks. The fact is our military, if you have the right leader, is very powerful. It's very good. And we've got great people in our military. But think of it. I had no wars. Remember when Hillary Clinton during the debate said, he will cause wars. Look at him. He will cause, he sounds like the kind of a guy that goes, well, the truth is, I was the kind of a guy that stopped wars. I had no wars. And just to finish is Viktor Orban, a tough guy, smart guy, runs, as you know, he runs Hungary. And he made the statement that if Trump comes back, everything will be settled. And I don't want to say why, because he did say why, but I don't want to say braggadocious. But he said Trump was a very tough guy and nobody messed around with him. If we had, and that included China and Russia, he said, if he were here, we'd have no wars. And right now, the Middle East is blowing up. Ukraine and Russia is getting worse and worse every day. And, you know, Ben, I don't know. I sort of hear you say it a little bit, too. But we're closer to World War III right now than we ever were. We have never been so close to World War III as we are right now.
Yeah, Mr. President, I really appreciate the time. I can tell you, I know a lot of the foreign leaders over there who pretend publicly that they don't want you to win. And then, you know, behind closed doors, they admit that things were way better when you were president of the United States. Obviously, I'm a supporter of the campaign. We're hoping and praying that you'll be president again very soon. The world requires it. Mr. President, really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Ben. Talk to you soon.
Well, folks, we're going to get into the news of the day in a moment. First, you're going to love our friends over at Legacy Box. Now, I'm not usually a nostalgia guy. I deal in facts, not the feelings. But even I can appreciate the importance of preserving family history. Legacy Box is the safest, easiest way to digitize those memories trapped on ancient media you probably can't even watch anymore. I mean, do you have a VCR anymore? It's like trying to find a reasonable person at a college campus. It's not possible. But with Legacy Box, you can revisit those memories without needing a museum of obsolete technology in your living room. Here's how it works. You load up your Legacy Box with all those old VHS tapes, camcorder tapes, and pictures. Then you send it back. Their team of professionals, and yes, they are right here in the United States, digitizes everything by hand. Before you know it, you get everything back on a thumb drive or in the cloud along with your originals. It got me thinking about the memories I want to be able to pass down to my kids, not just stuff from me, but from my parents, from my grandparents. This is how we maintain our cultural heritage in an age where everything seems disposable. So whether you got those old home movies gathering dust or photographs fading in some album somewhere, don't let the memories slip away. Use Legacy Box to preserve them. Here's an offer you won't want to miss. For a limited time, you can start preserving your past and save a whopping 50%. That's correct, half off. Go to legacybox.com/Shapiro to revisit and share those irreplaceable memories from your past. That's legacybox.com/Shapiro. Folks, I've been asked a lot of questions over the course of the last few years about my shift on President Trump. I went from not voting for either candidate in 2016 to voting for President Trump in 2020 to openly supporting him financially in 2024. Recently, I had the opportunity to sit down with Chris Williamson of the Modern Wisdom podcast. We covered a lot of stuff, including why I decided to support President Trump with my own checkbook this year. Take a listen. It became clear to me that it wasn't just enough for me to actually vote for Trump or support Trump verbally, that I actually wanted to get involved in the campaign, because I think that the consequences of Trump losing to either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris now would have been quite disastrous. So what I would say is that my feelings about Trump on sort of a personal level haven't changed radically on him as a character. They've changed somewhat on him in terms of the policies that he implemented. My opinions about sort of the sanity of the left have changed fairly radically since 2016. I think that the left has that sort of meme that Elon likes to tweet out where it shows, you know, how he was sort of in the center and then the entire center just moved to the left. And so he ended up on the right. I think that that's fairly realistic about how far the left has moved.
Go give a listen to the entire podcast. It really is, I think, an excellent interview. Again, go check him out. Chris Williamson, the Modern Wisdom podcast over at Apple Podcasts. Well, folks, in a little while, I'm going to get back to what it was like to be with President Trump on October 7th, obviously an incredibly important date, and introduce him to the family of a hostage currently being held in Gaza. But first, I want to get to the news of the day. So obviously, we now have a major hurricane that is barreling toward Florida. Hurricane Milton has achieved Category 4 status. It's sort of vacillating between Category 4 and Category 5. Kamala Harris is somehow turning this into a story about her. It's really incredible. See, here's the thing about Kamala Harris. She is not a competent candidate. She's not. She's not a competent vice president. She wasn't a competent senator. She was not a competent AG. And she is certainly not a competent candidate. So yesterday, she got in a fight with Governor Ron DeSantis for nothing, over nothing. So Governor DeSantis has been trying to handle successfully the fallout from Hurricane Helene, which went up through the panhandle. And he is getting ready to deal with a massively destructive hurricane that is barreling down on the west coast of Florida that we're all watching really closely. And Kamala Harris is pissed off at him. Why is she mad? She's really mad. She's really mad because she thinks he ignored her phone calls. So first of all, they ain't dating. Okay, let's just be real about this. They have no relationship. She is not the person, according to her, who is in charge of FEMA. Remember, she is running as a candidate who's in charge of nothing, but somehow also deeply important to the American body politic. And her entire shtick is that she is separate from this administration and responsible for nothing the administration does. But she then shows up to do photo ops at like the FEMA Hurricane Center. So now she's going to pretend that she's really ticked at Ron DeSantis for having ignored her phone call. This is political malpractice, by the way. What she should be saying is, listen, I tried to call Governor DeSantis. He's probably busy right now. And, you know, we're here for him, whatever he needs. That would be the smart political move. But because she is vindictive and quite unpleasant, here she was yesterday ripping into Governor DeSantis, who's a little busy right now. Okay, this hurricane is supposed to directly hit Tampa. Millions of people are in the storm path. He's a little busy to spend time helping her prop up her ailing campaign. But she did take time. She answers no questions. She's on the campaign trail. She answers no serious questions except on 60 Minutes, which, as we'll see, is a disaster for her. She kind of made her way over to the press just to rip into DeSantis yesterday, which is really quite gross.
Governor DeSantis, NBC is reporting Governor DeSantis is ignoring your calls on hurricanes, resources, and help. How does that hurt the situation here?
You know, moments of crisis, if nothing else, should really be the moment that anyone who calls themselves a leader says they're going to put politics aside and put the people first. People are in desperate need of support right now, and playing political games at this moment in these crisis situations, these are the height of the emergency situations, is just utterly irresponsible, and it is selfish, and it is about political gamesmanship instead of doing the job that you took an oath to do, which is to put the people first.
This is a patent absurdity. It's a patent. I live in Florida, okay? I have friends who are on the west coast of Florida. In fact, I have extended family members who are on the west coast of Florida. And she is so unbelievably full of it. It is enraging. It is enraging. He's selfish and irresponsible because he didn't pick up her phone call, supposedly. This deeply important person who is related in no way to policymaking, who doesn't even have the stones to remove the person who she removed as the nominee. Remember, she removed Joe Biden as the nominee of the Democratic Party because he was going to lose to President Trump because he was mentally incompetent. And then she leaves him in the White House to be a befuddled old fool so that she doesn't have to take responsibility for anything. And then she's mad that people supposedly won't pick up her phone calls. As it turns out, that's not even the story. As it turns out, her people are trying to get a hold of maybe Ron DeSantis' aides or something. And again, he's busy. He's the governor of a state that's about to get walloped with the second major hurricane inside of 3 weeks. And she says he's selfish and irresponsible. What does she do for a living? She does nothing. She sits in a room at the White House and she plays solitaire all day until called upon to throw grandpa off the back of the train. That's her entire career trajectory. She's a do-nothing politician her entire life. And she's ripping into DeSantis, the single most competent governor in the country when it comes to dealing with disasters. Maybe she should talk to, you know, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, who's been blowing it over in North Carolina. But he's a Democrat, so we're not going to hear about that. So she's ripping into DeSantis is selfish. It's hard to imagine anyone more selfish than a vice president who is running for president of the United States on the decaying corpse of her boss while ripping into a governor who's in the middle of hurricane preparedness. What a pathetic specimen she is. Here's Ron DeSantis correctly clocking the hell out of her on Fox News.
My focus has not been on dealing with Kamala Harris. I saw the news report. I didn't know she tried to contact me. But I'd also say it's not about you, Kamala. Right. It's about the people of Florida. My focus is exactly where it should be. And I can tell you this, I've worked on these hurricanes under both President Trump and President Biden. Neither of them ever tried to politicize it. She has never called on any of the storms we've had since she's been vice president until apparently now. Why all of a sudden is she trying to parachute in and inject herself when she's never shown any interest in the past? We know it's because of politics. We know it's because of her campaign. I have zero time to entertain these political games.
I mean, it is amazing. The entire media have decided that Donald Trump is very bad for criticizing the FEMA response and the Biden administration response to North Carolina. They've decided that he's terrible. It's awful. We've had wall-to-wall news coverage of that. Meanwhile, the other candidate, Kamala Harris, who is currently the vice president of the United States, is ripping into the sitting governor of a state that is doing hurricane preparedness because what? He's a little busy? She has no responsibilities. The vice presidency is a warm bucket of spit. The notion that he has some sort of deep abiding responsibilities to the people of Florida to give a call back to this pathetic new paint job on a broken down Ford Pinto of an administration is just ridiculous on its face. Meanwhile, this administration won't even answer for its own failures with regard to North Carolina. By the way, they delayed for days in calling up new members of the military to help with the search and rescue in North Carolina, as my friend Eric Erickson has pointed out. In fact, here was Peter Ducey of Fox News going at it with Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday over the failures of Joe Biden's hurricane response with regard to Hurricane Helene.
The president's letter is not misinformation. Would you agree?
No, the way you're asking me the question is misinformation. There is money that we are allocating to the impacted areas, and there's money there to help people who truly need it. There are survivors who need the funding, And it's there.
That you don't like misinformation.
I said I actually said we have the money available to help survivors of Hurricane Helene and also Hurricane Milton. Now there's going to be a shortfall, right? Because we don't know how bad its Hurricane Milton is going to be. And so we're going to need additional funding.
That's exactly what I just asked about. And you said it was misinformation.
Yes. What you're asking me is why Congress needs to come back and do their job. That's what you're asking me. Congress needs to come back and do their job and provide extra assistance, extra funding to disaster relief fund. That's what Congress needs to do, and we're going to continue to urge that. You may not want that, but that's okay. That's what this president wants, and that's what the vice president wants. Thanks, everybody.
You understand she has to run away wearing her Al Capone suit. Or something. I don't even know what she's wearing there, Karine Jean-Pierre. I rarely comment on the fashion choices of Karine Jean-Pierre, which are pretty wild. That's a pretty wild one. I know where she got that jacket. She got it from like secondhand from a thrift shop or something. She's dressed up as a Chicago gangster from 1932. In any case, she has to run away when asked a tough question about their handling of Hurricane Helene. But the big issue is that Kamala Harris feels insulted. She's a little insulted because, you know, she's not top priority for Governor DeSantis. Absolutely pathetic. You know what should be top priority for her? For this administration would be fixing FEMA, which apparently is a full-scale disaster area on its own. We'll get some more on that in just a second. First, I want to remind you, over the past 2 years, Daily Wire Plus has collaborated with Dr. Jordan B. Peterson on a collection of shows to help you win at life. The Mastering Life collection with Jordan B. Peterson is now available. Mastering Life topics range from marriage, masculinity, and managing mental health with Jordan Peterson's newest series, Depression and Anxiety. Plus, coming this fall, Jordan has two new Mastering Life series, one on negotiation and one on success. Become a Daily Wire Plus member for unlimited access to Jordan's incredible Mastering Life collection today at dailywire.com/subscribe. Use code Jordan at checkout for 35% off your brand new annual membership. That's dailywire.com/subscribe. Well, while Kamala Harris is very upset with Ron DeSantis about somehow not calling her back as though he ghosted her or something, well, she is focused very strongly on all the people she's miffed at because, you know, they're not bothering to call her back because she's a useless person. It turns out that FEMA has been facing severe staffing shortages, according to the New York Times. The New York Times reporting yesterday, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is running out of staff to deal with the potential devastation of Hurricane Milton as it barrels toward Tampa with wind speeds that have reached 175 miles per hour. As of Monday morning, just 9% of FEMA personnel, or 1,217 people, were available to respond to the hurricane or other disasters, according to the agency's daily operations briefing. To put that into context, over the previous 5 years, one quarter of agency staff was available for deployment at this point in hurricane season. Even in 2017,
arguably FEMA's busiest year in the past decade. After Hurricane Harvey flooded Houston, Hurricane Irma plowed through Florida, and Hurricane Maria plunged Puerto Rico into darkness, FEMA's staffing reserves at this point in October were 19%, more than twice the levels they are right now. Now, FEMA's pretending that this is all totally fine, it's all totally normal, but the reality is that FEMA is wildly understaffed. In a report last year, the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office found 35% of FEMA's positions were unfilled, partly because of rising disaster activity during the year, which increased burnout and employee attrition. So let's just get this straight. We're now spending more money than any time in human history, the United States government, any time in human history, and they can't find people to staff FEMA? Like, literally one of the only functions that pretty much everyone agrees is on the federal government's agenda at this point in time, and they can't find people to staff FEMA? This should be a major scandal. Who's been in charge the last 3.5 years? I promise you, if this were Donald Trump, they'd be talking about how he had somehow blown it on FEMA, how President Trump had underfunded FEMA. They're still trying to do that routine, blame this on the Republicans. It ain't the Republicans in charge. They've spent more money on random crap over the past 4 years than literally any government in the history of all humanity. And somehow, they couldn't find the cash to come up with to staff FEMA? Truly? Congress last week approved FEMA's request to top up its disaster relief fund. That was before Hurricane Milton. Alejandro Mayorkas, Homeland Security Secretary last week, said FEMA needed even more funding, but they can't find people. Apparently, some of FEMA's most highly trained personnel, which are grouped into what the agency calls cadres, are at particularly low levels. As of Monday morning, of the 2,579 people who work in the agency's individual assistance cadre, 4 were available to deploy to Florida. Of the 50 people who are assigned to act as federal coordinating officers, which are the directors of disaster operations, 1 was available as of Monday. You want to talk about mismanagement at the highest level? This is what mismanagement looks like. Wait, who's the president and the vice president again? Maybe she should go to FEMA and talk to them. Ron DeSantis doesn't work for Kamala Harris, but theoretically, you know who's supposed to. Maybe all the people she was using as a backdrop for her FEMA photo op a week ago. Or maybe it turns out that FEMA has been pursuing other priorities. Newly revealed audio and video from 2023, according to the New York Post, shows a webinar in which federal health and disaster personnel start talking about the urgent need to move away from policies that benefit the largest number of people and instead focus on disaster equity, meaning which minorities can we protect using federal resources, which, by the way, is racist and a violation of the Civil Rights Act.
The shift that we're seeing right now is a shift in emergency management from utilitarian principles where everything is designed for the greatest good for the greatest amount of people to disaster equity. But we have to do more, right? And so this topic is intersecting, I think, with a number of other topics where we have to look at policies and understand to what extent they have disadvantaged communities that had less assets, communities that had pre-existing vulnerabilities in accessing disaster-related recovery supports. We also know that communities that are highly bonded within can survive in the immediate aftermath of a disaster, but if they're not linked outside of their highly bonded communities, they will have less ability to thrive and support and even influence how recovery looks in their communities. So we have to be looking at making sure that we have highly bonded communities, which would be, and one of them that I would identify would be LGBT communities, have to be highly linked across power structures before a disaster happens to help inform and guide how recovery looks.
How about this? How about they fire all these schmucks and get in people who actually know how to, you know, handle disasters? How about that? Shouldn't that be a scandal? Where is Kamala there? What exactly would you say that she does? Now, I understand the entire media apparatus is designed to turn Kamala Harris into something brand new. And there's a poll out from the New York Times today that shows Kamala Harris up nationally 49-46 and says that a plurality of voters see her as a more change candidate than Donald Trump. That's insane. She's the current vice president of the United States. The media have tried to do a wonderful job spinning her as something brand new. But she wants it both ways. Either she is a deeply responsible person who's very important in the government and Ron DeSantis has to call her, or she's completely irrelevant. Which is it? Well, the reality is she's running a very bad campaign at this point. The more people see her, the more they are likely to hate her. And there is something that's going on with the Kamala Harris campaign. So she's doing really well right now, apparently, with college-educated white voters.
College-educated white voters love Kamala Harris. And they love Kamala Harris because she's precisely the sort of word salad, jargony, synergistic candidate that college-educated people seem to like. She gives the appearance of intelligence without having any content at all. In this way, by the way, she's sort of the opposite of President Trump, who the media love to disparage as stupid, but who actually has actual meat for his policies that help Americans. She says things that you would find in a corporate DEI session, and then everybody nods along and pretends that what they're saying is wise. But she actually has nothing to say. It's exactly, apparently, what the college grads love. Here's Harry Enten on CNN describing.
White college grads have been this group that have been moving further and further to the left. All right, this is the Democratic margin among white college grads. Look, Hillary Clinton won them by 5 points. Then Joe Biden won them by 9. Look at this margin that Kamala Harris is pulling up in the polls right now among white college grads. It's an 18-point margin, double the margin that Joe Biden had just 4 years ago. I went back through the record books. This would be the largest win for a Democratic presidential candidate among white college grads in recorded history.
Okay, so why is that happening? Because Kamala Harris is a stupid person's idea of a smart person. There are a lot of college grads in this country. You know, when you think of a college grad, typically, you're thinking of somebody from an Ivy League. Typically, you're thinking of somebody who's really bright. It turns out there are a lot of college grads in this country overall. Something like 35% of all American adults at this point who have already been of college age go to college. And that number is increasing pretty radically. Okay, well, those college grads apparently think that if you talk like a sociology professor, this somehow makes you smart. Actually, it means that you're obfuscatory and stupid. Kamala Harris is unfortunately obfuscatory. She obfuscates, and she is not wise. There is nothing going on. There is no policy. There is no meat on the bones. There is nothing. She's an empty shell. She's a coat of paint on a broken down jalopy, as I've now said 1,000 times. And she made that perfectly clear on 60 Minutes last night. Kamala Harris is an empty shell, but this election is a toss-up. So let's talk about something that's got the political establishment more nervous than a left-winger at a free speech rally. It's called Kalshi. It's the first and only legal prediction market in the United States. For a century, the elites have been hoarding this privilege like it's the last avocado toast in Brooklyn, but Kalshi blew the doors wide open. They've secured approval from the feds to offer what they call event contracts. Basically, you can take positions on whether future events will happen or not. This is about leveraging your knowledge to make money and hedge against risk. Plus, these markets are scary accurate at predicting outcomes, way more reliable than the rigged polls the legacy media love to trot out. Here's the kicker. Kalshi isn't just for elections. You can trade on everything from economic indicators to climate change predictions. So whether you want to profit from your political acumen or just stick it to the establishment by participating in the most accurate election forecast out there, Kalshi is your answer. Here's the deal. Sign up today at Kalshi.com/Shapiro. That's Kalshi.com/Shapiro. When you deposit $100, they'll give you an extra $20 to trade with. That's right. They're basically paying you to join the prediction revolution. Let me spell it out one more time. Kalshi.com/Shapiro. Again, deposit $100, receive $20 free to trade. It's that simple. Don't wait. Head over to Kalshi.com/Shapiro today. Again, Kamala Harris, not a smart human being, but the press have been trying to portray her as a smart human being. When I say she's not a smart human being, I mean that. She's not particularly bright. She's not like the dumbest person you ever met, but she is the middle manager at a major corporation who basically is living out the dream by working in HR until they retire with some sort of pension. That is what Kamala Harris in a normal world would be. She's basically that, except with politics. She's been elevated to every position she ever holds, except for the Senate, through no real performance of her own. And the reality is, even when she ran for the Senate, she was running against another Democrat, Loretta Sanchez. She's certainly elevated to the vice presidency based on her own failures in her first presidential campaign. And any question, she was on 60 Minutes last night. And probably when she did 60 Minutes, she was figuring that she was going to get a friendly interviewer. After all, the legacy media have been carrying around a drool cup for her this entire election. Unfortunately for her, she drew Bill Whitaker. And Bill Whitaker, basically, he was honey badger. He did not give a bleep. So he started asking her, you know, actual questions. And the problem for Kamala Harris is that actual questions are her kryptonite. Questions that actually, you know, seek answers about her policies or about what she wants to do or about her record. Those are, it's like kryptonite to Superman. It's incredible how fast she falls apart. She is such a paper tiger of a candidate. So, for example, she was asked by Bill Whitaker about the fact that she has switched pretty much all of her positions. Here was her terrible answer.
Let me tell you what your critics and the columnists say.
Okay.
They say that the reason so many voters don't know you is that you have changed your position on so many things. You were against fracking, now you're for it. You supported looser immigration policies, now you're tightening them up. You were for Medicare for all, now you're not. So many that people don't truly know what you believe or what you stand for. And I know you've heard that.
In the last 4 years, I have been Vice President of the United States. And I have been traveling our country. And I have been listening to folks and seeking what is possible in terms of common ground. I believe in building consensus. We are a diverse people, geographically, regionally, in terms of where we are in our backgrounds. And what the American people do want is that we have leaders who can build consensus, where we can figure out compromise and understand it's not a bad thing, as long as you don't compromise your values, to find common sense solutions. And that has been my approach.
I'm sorry, the number of platitudes in that answer, I think I lost count, truly. Remember, the question is, people don't know you because you keep switching your positions. And her answer was, I will not explain any of that. I went on a bus one time. I went around America and I built consensus. In what way? In what way? And well, the good news is Bill Whitaker didn't let up on her. So he asked her, for example, about her economic plans. And he pointed out that she has no way of effectuating her economic plans. And her answer to that was more platitudes.
My plan is about saying that when you invest in small businesses, you invest in the middle class, and you strengthen America's economy. Small businesses are part of the backbone of America's economy.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President, the question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes. It is not right that teachers and nurses and firefighters are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires and the biggest corporations.
But
I plan on making that fair.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with a lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about. Their constituents are those firefighters and teachers and nurses.
She has no answers whatsoever. You can see how flustered she's getting. You mean she's actually being called on how she's going to effectuate these plans? By the way, the lie that the rich don't pay their fair share in America is the biggest lie in American economics. It is such an unbelievable lie. Let me explain. The top quintile of income earners in the United States don't pay some of the net taxes. They pay all of the net taxes. By net taxes, I mean amount you pay in versus amount you get out from the government. All. Okay, this notion that people who are... I've been in a bunch of different tax brackets in my life. I've moved from paying middle-class tax brackets to paying very, very upper-class tax brackets. And let me explain to you, the amount of money that I sign over to the federal government every year is not my fair share. It is way more than my fair share. The last year I was living in California between state and federal income tax, I was paying about 50% of everything I earned to the federal and state government. She is so unbelievably full of it on this. It is maddening. But she doesn't have any answers about anything. So, for example, she was asked a question about her immigration policy. And Bill Whitaker's like, I noticed that you let millions of people into the country. And now you're shifting on that. Do you have any regrets? And she then undid her handkerchief and showed her no regrets neck tattoo.
Was it a mistake to loosen the immigration policies as much as you did?
It's a long-standing problem. And solutions are at hand. And from day one, literally, we have been offering solutions.
What I was asking was it a mistake to kind of allow that flood to happen in the first place?
I think the policies that we have been proposing are about fixing a problem, not promoting a problem, okay?
But the numbers did quadruple.
And the numbers today, because of what we have done, we have cut the flow of illegal immigration by half. We have cut the flow of fentanyl by half. But we need Congress to be able to act to actually fix the problem.
Bill Whitaker almost can't believe the stupidity of the person he's sitting with. You can read it on his face. He's like Jim Halpert in The Office. She's like, I cannot believe this person is actually running for president of the United States. Then she tries to explain
about her long history of gun ownership. Hey, let me, as a gun owner, this is not how people who own guns talk about their guns. I'm just going to say I'm skeptical of her gun ownership story.
You recently surprised people when you said that you are a gun owner. And then if someone came into your
house...
That
was not the first time I've talked about it. That's not the first time I've talked about it.
So what kind of gun do you own, and when and why did you get it?
I have a Glock, and I've had it for quite some time. And, I mean, look, Bill, my background is in law enforcement. And so there you go.
Have you ever fired it?
Yes. Of course I have. At a shooting range? Yes, of course I have.
Okay, well, what kind of Glock? What kind of Glock? That's a brand. Usually you get the model, right? Like, I have a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield. Like, that's... Yes, I do not believe you, madam. I have doubts. And meanwhile, she also had comments on foreign policy. So the comments were not particularly illuminating because she never has anything of importance to say. Mostly, she just says, we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it. Well, you've been vice president, I noticed, so you could have dealt with it before, but you're not. Kamala Harris was asked about the fact that the Netanyahu government in Israel has basically been ignoring the Biden White House. And the reason they've been ignoring the Biden White House is because every time they tell the Biden White House what exactly is going on, the Biden White House promptly leaks it to the press. It turns out that Joe Biden is not a pro-Israel president in any serious way. It turns out that he believes that Israel basically exists in order to be his personal plaything so he can sacrifice their interests to the Iranians at every available turn. Here was Kamala Harris's answer to this question.
It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen in the region.
Yeah, well, that was totally unilluminating. Really appreciate that. So that was one of her big media appearances, 60 Minutes, where she completely botched it. She also once on a sex podcast called Call Her Daddy. Now, I will admit I've never listened to the Call Her Daddy podcast, mainly because I have no interest in listening to Alex Cooper talk about her latest blowjob techniques. But in any case, Kamala Harris apparently thought it was deeply important to go on the Call Her Daddy podcast, where she basically just spilled more platitudes. She clearly doesn't know what she's talking about. So at one point during this interview with Alex Cooper, one of the great intellects of our time, again, most famous for explaining how many people she has slept with and in what positions, Kamala Harris started jabbering about starting a small business. It is very clear from this clip she has no idea about the difference between a tax deduction and a check from the government, which are not the same thing at all.
Another thing that I'm really focused on is small businesses and startups and giving startups a $50,000 tax deduction, because right now it's $5,000 and you can't start up anything, any small business with $5,000.
Okay, that is not what a tax deduction does, madam. Okay, a tax deduction is where you get to deduct the expense against the tax that you would pay on that expenditure. That you don't get a $50,000 check from the government when you get a $50,000 tax deduction. That's not how it works. But she's never run a business because she's an ignoramus about economics. Well, I think my favorite part of the Call Her Daddy podcast is when Kamala suddenly realized what a woman is. It's always an amusing thing when Democrats violate their own precepts with regard to what a woman constitutes. So you're never allowed to mention that a woman is a biological human female until someone makes a joke about it and that person's a leftist, in which case you can laugh about it. So here is Kamala cracking up and men apparently not knowing where a tampon goes. Now, can we be clear about this? It's pretty obvious where a tampon goes. Okay, but, which, by the way, is why they shouldn't be in boys' high school bathrooms, as her vice presidential candidate did as the Minnesota governor. There is no place for a boy to put a tampon, idiots. But Kamala Harris knows it. So now she sort of admits that she knows it. So she's going to have to explain that to her vice presidential candidate, who, again, has nothing between the ears.
It's outrageous. I mean, daddy gang, to put it in our TikTok terms. I have seen girls on the street walk up to men and be like, do you know where a tampon goes? Do you know how many tampons we use?
And there's Kamala Harris laughing because men don't know where a tampon goes. Define man. Define woman, please.
these people. And this is the best they have to offer. Oh, yeah, she also has a vice presidential candidate. So Tim Walz also appeared on 60 Minutes, and it did not go amazingly well for him either, because, as we know, Tim Walz is an extraordinarily weird human being. So at one point, he was trying to make a case for Kamala Harris, and he said that a president should know how to laugh. What? That's your case? A president should know how to laugh? So get somebody from, like, a 1980s sitcom laugh track to be the president of the United States? If by know how to laugh, you mean cackle like a hyena, then I suppose that Kamala Harris fits the bill. Here's Tim Walz making a truly convincing case as to why the crazy joker-like cackler ought to be president of the United States.
We get along really well. She's amazing. She makes me laugh. And I think it's a good thing, by the way. I think a president should know how to laugh, not at someone, but laugh with things or whatever. So, and I like it.
Walz was also asked about his history of being dishonest, and he said he has a problem being specific. Yeah, we noticed. We noticed. So this is the ticket. These are the people that want to be leading the country, and somehow they're running dead even. The American people ought to tune in right now because we have less than 30 days left until this election. This ticket cannot be allowed to run the country. She's an incompetent. She's a buffoon. She's empty-headed. She's masquerading as some sort of intellect by basically regurgitating crap from your company HR handbook. And Tim Walz has as many brain cells as he does years of age. It's truly amazing that these folks are somehow considered like the top heap of American politics. And here's the thing. Whatever you think about President Trump, I don't care what you think about President Trump in terms of character, in terms of intellect, you know what he did while he was president. And what he gave you was way the hell better than what these people have given you over the past 4 years. And by the way, over the past 12 of the last 16 years, because this would just be Obama administration part four. So you know precisely what you're getting in this election. Anybody who pretends that they don't know, there's like a box of chocolates, you never know what you're going to get. You know precisely what you're going to get. Kamala Harris looks very much like Joe Biden, looks very much like Barack Obama. And Donald Trump, too, looks very much like Donald Trump won. And we all know it. And if the American people keep that in mind, then Donald Trump will win going away. In just a second, I'm going to talk about my visit to New York with President Trump yesterday. If you're not a member, become a member. Use code Shapiro. Check out for 2 months free on all annual plans. Click that link in the description and join us.